We're going to bring in William Henkel first, CJ, Eversource spokesperson and the folks there. He was on with us yesterday. What are we looking at now, William? I think the governor was probably right. We'll probably get a few more power outages before you start to knock those numbers down.
Yes, thanks for having me this morning, Jack. So we currently have about 97,000 Eversource customers statewide in New Hampshire without power. This is a long-duration storm, so additional damage and outages more likely than not. Most areas of the state have been impacted and seen some damage. To the extent there's been one area hit harder than another, I would say that it's probably, if you go from Nashua up to Derry, over to Rochester following an arc, those are probably where the damage has been most extensive. But again, we've seen outages and damage to the electric system in nearly every area of the state that we serve. I think the number one thing right now that is posing challenges for our crews is just the road conditions are incredibly difficult. They're blocked roads across the state, trees down, wires down, and then even the roads that aren't blocked, the heavy wet snow is almost like cement. So travel is very slow going and difficult for our crews. With that said, we have restored power to more than 56,000 customers statewide since last night, including more than 49,000 customers by our remote system operators using smart switch technology to isolate outages and reroute power to customers. So we have more than 800 crews, line and tree crews across the state, and they're going to be working as quickly as safely as possible until every customer is restored.
And William, the best way to report an outage is?
There are multiple ways. It's up to whatever works for our customers. You can give us a call at 800-662-7764. If you've signed up for our two-way texting system, you can text to report the outage. If you've downloaded our mobile app, you can report an outage and check the status of your outage there. And then you can also always do it online as well. So multiple ways for our customer to do that. We do not have a preference, just whatever works best for them. Please be sure to report that outage if you think your neighbors have, because every piece of information we get from customers helps us in the restoration process.
Thank you, William Henkel, Eversource, and a big thanks to the line workers out there. Thank you, William. I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to bring in the governor of the state, Governor Chris Sununu, with an update on Mother Nature. Busy, busy time, because before we know it, we're also talking an eclipse on Monday. But let's start today. Governor, how are you? And I know you're out and about. I heard you on with Mike Pomp earlier.
Yeah. Look, we're out and about. The good news is not a lot of people are out and about, and that's good. If you can stay off the roads, stay off the roads. It is so slick out there. It's such a heavy, wet snow, especially kind of from that Concord area down into the seacoast. It's really slick. But and as you were just discussing, it's great you had Eversource on. Those line crews are working hard. It's physically difficult. I don't know if they mentioned this. You know, to get the line trucks from point A to point B, they're doing their best. But it's probably going to be a couple days. I think our total statewide number is north of 130,000 power outages right now. So, and we'll likely climb a little bit in over the next few hours, but we'll get things cleaned up overnight. On the plowing side, we have hundreds of crews out there, but unfortunately, given the huge number and the type of storm that we have, it could be a couple days for a couple folks. So we just don't want anyone to think it's definitely just a half hour power outage and that's it. With just the huge numbers and the huge weight of snow on these systems and on these lines, it could take a little time, especially for folks in more rural areas.
Governor, I think you may be the only governor still who can operate a snow groomer. I don't know if you're out there on one of those, but you mentioned with Mike a great point. You know, this is a windfall for skiers, boarders, and riders going into this weekend and maybe this week. And we're seeing a lot of snow in the North Country, but everywhere else. I mean, there's a lot of kids out of school today. Most everything's closed, so watch out because the kids are going to want to play like kids do and should. So when you're out and about, you might have some kids sledding and all that, right?
Oh, that's it. Pretty much every school is closed, and kids are definitely out and about. And because the roads are so slick, you got to be very, very careful. So just know that the kids are what's out there. That's what you got to really watch out for today. And this weekend, as you said, I think it's going to be a gangbuster weekend, this weekend and next weekend, for the ski areas and just for the snowmobiles, right? We haven't had a great snowmobile or a great cross-country ski season kind of limited natural snow up in the North Country, but it's going to be terrific at least this weekend and next weekend. I think the 10 days. Oh, right. And then we have this eclipse, right?
I know.
Right in the middle of it all on the 8th.
A lot of extra visitors up north, correct?
Oh, it's going to be packed. So, you know, taking a step aside from the storm, on Monday, you're going to have tens of thousands of people coming up to COAS. I mean, the population of COAS is going to double or triple in a few hours. So traffic is going to be an issue. All the hotels are well booked, of course. A lot of folks from Massachusetts are going to be coming up. So Bluebird Day, it's going to be a great opportunity to kind of observe the eclipse. Hopefully everyone has their glasses. Please don't look at it safely. But understand the traffic up there could be very, very severe.
Are you going to be up north?
Oh, yeah, I'll be up there as well. I think we're going to try to get up to Coleman State Park, which is a beautiful state park up in COAS. And I envision some folks just driving around or maybe stuck in traffic when the eclipse really hits its peak. People are just going to pull off the road. I don't recommend that, by the way. That can be very dangerous. But just knowing that is likely to happen, please be careful of that. Yeah. Please be aware. You could get a lot of folks just popping out of their cars.
Governor Chris Sununu, I'd be remiss, you know me, when it comes to policy. I have you. It's been a while. I was going to reach out and your team and Ben and have you on anyway. But yesterday, on a legislative question, you were on with me a month or two ago talking about this legalized marijuana bill coming through the House Finance Committee. You had some basic, simple prerequisites, you said, to even consider this thing. It seems the House Finance Committee ignored that. Have they basically made this a deal breaker going into the Senate and if it ever reached you or not?
I laid out what I want to see, and if the bill gets to my desk with what I want to see, I'd sign it. It's really that simple. The way the House bill is designed now, no, I wouldn't sign that. They're not kind of taking the right precautions specifically around kids. I've always said I'm not a big fan of this idea. I'm really not at all. But I do believe it's inevitable, and there's a responsibility to kind of make sure we get the system right and not copy a lot of the mistakes that Vermont and Maine and Massachusetts have made. We have an opportunity not to do it like that, to do it smarter, to do it better, control the marketing, the messaging, keeping it away from kids. And if they can kind of build in the constructs that I've looked for and been very clear about, haven't really wavered on, we can get there. But if they don't, they don't. That's just the way it is. I try to be super clear about it.
All right. Thank you very much, Governor Chris Sununu, live. Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of the Nation. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, buddy.
Want to switch gears now. Time for our regular segment brought to you by our friends at Auto Fair, the New Hampshire State Police. Sergeant Jordan Kopko with an update on the roadways out there. The governor was saying and hoping most people are off the roads, but we know that's not always the case. Sergeant, what are your folks out in the field dealing with? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Thanks again for having me. It's all hands on deck today with everybody helping out as far as troopers out on the roadway and handling crashes, handling vehicles off the road. It's definitely busy, but it's something we were definitely prepared for.
Do you have are there pockets where your troopers on the road are having a bigger problem? For example, I always know in that Concord Beltway when you're coming up 93 north and south near a bow, that's always a choke point. Then, of course, anywhere. I mean, it could be, you know, where a tree comes down on a side road. Is it scattered, or are you seeing some areas where it's a little more?
Yeah, it's scattered, but definitely over in the Salem, Nashua area, like the Everett, is seeing a lot more issues. And then I know the Spalding was a little rough this morning, but the guys and girls are out there doing a really good job. The calls I've noticed as I've been monitoring it has slowed down a little bit for cars off the road, and I think just a lot of people have made the wise decision to stay home today. But the guys and girls have definitely been busy this morning.
Yeah, you don't have like a rough number. I know sometimes when we've had a little bit of snow, I think there have been like 80 different crashes or responses out there. Are we talking like close to 100, or do you have any idea on that?
I don't. I'd be guessing, to be honest with you, sir. I don't, and I don't want to make something up. But they've definitely been busy. Even I know the Up in the Notch was shut down last night. I know the Everett.
Oh, really?
The everything's back open as far as I know. But I know the Everett had some issues today. And then in the Concord area, there was partial shutdowns and lane closures for a little bit as we're trying to clean everybody up and get people back on the road.
Well, you're definitely not a politician in Washington if you don't want to make stuff up. No, I'm sorry, Sergeant. Hey, I want to – Sergeant Jordan Kopko, New Hampshire State Police. I want to ask you, though, one thing I noticed coming in more on the coast is the variation. For example, the coastal area, it's been more of a mushy slush stuff.
Yeah.
And we had a high tide, so we do have some flooding in the areas, as well as that fire last night in Rye near Washington and Ocean Boulevard streets. But then you go inland, and all of a sudden it can be all snow. And then, of course, you're dealing with trucks that are trying to clear the road. So it's hard to know if it's slick or slippery. If you're going along and it seems like just rain, then all of a sudden it might, on a bridge or an off-ramp, it might be slick and slippery.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, if you can, I think, I mean, everyone looking at the forecast, the next couple of days following this are actually going to be nice early next week. So if you could just hang out at home and do what you can at home, and I think we had enough time to prepare for this. I know some people have to get out and go, yeah. But just give yourself plenty of time. Take your time. Nothing's worth it of hurting yourself or somebody else out there, because right. It can be dangerous. All of a sudden, you know, a young lady right in front of me today actually on the Spalding went over to a couple lanes and then was crashed. So it can happen really quickly, and just give yourself plenty of time and definitely move over for the blue lights, yellow lights for the tow trucks, red lights for the ambulance and fire. So any kind of first responders out there helping out, please just move over and just slow way down when you see that ahead, just to make sure everybody can get to where they need to go.
And remember those big trucks with the piles, they can't stop on a dime. Sergeant Jordan Kopko, thank you for what you do. And anything else, please text or call in. The lines are open for you as always. And we thank all the folks out there working local and state. Thank you very much. The Paw Truck Drivers, DOT, State Police, local folks, response, tow trucks, you name it. Thank you, Sergeant Jordan Kopko, New Hampshire State Police. Brought to you by Auto Fair. Thank you, Sergeant.
Thank you, Jack.
And one of the biggest differences I see, Brad Card, I just introduced you already, so I'll bring you in, is Trump has a very solid base. You've seen it in the primaries. Now, Biden has sailed through the primary process as well, but I don't think his base is as formed in concrete like Trump. So it really does come down to the independent voters. And Biden has a record, so what are the issues going to be this fall? That's a question. What are the issues? Abortion rights? Fair. Yep, that will be a big one. The economy, because things still cost a lot of money. We're not even sure the Fed's going to cut interest rates in June. Interest rates are high, so people are feeling less, like they have less. Immigration, southern border crisis, and escalating tensions in the world, in the Middle East and Ukraine. And people are going to say, who's better at handling all this? I think those are the issues. Brad Card, good morning on this Nor'easter Thursday. How are you?
Yeah, hey, I'd like to start laughing about the snowstorm up there, but I won't. I won't do that to you.
What, are you playing golf at noon?
You never know. You never know. It is a nice day for golf. Every day is a nice day for golf.
Why can't you get on the Champions Tour? I love watching these players. They've had 150 starts, and they finally win one. Why don't you get on there and play with, like, Curtis and the gang and just give it a shot?
Because there's a little thing called putting. There's a little thing called putting that's part of golf. It's really hard.
Well, Brad, today we are preoccupied with weather up here, but I just wanted to see what we're missing. And I'm watching. I think the nickname might be Landslide Biden. You know, are you better off now than you were four years ago?
Biden is actually losing right now in the polls. I mean, I think Biden's in deep, serious trouble. He's in deep political trouble. Recent polling, Arizona, Trump is up 4. Georgia, Trump is up 4. Even Pennsylvania, he's up 1. Michigan, he's up 4. These are the battleground states that are really at play. Places like Massachusetts are not in play, and California, and you know, there are really red states and there are really blue states. But it's these battleground states that you need to win. And quite frankly, President Biden has just done nothing to help himself. I mean, I think he's really been just about as politically tone deaf as you can be. You were just talking about the big issues. I think, yes, abortion is going to be an issue, and it looks like it's going to be a bigger issue now in Florida, because that looks like it's going to be on the ballot. But to me, it's the border, the border, the border, because the border feeds into everything. It feeds into the inflation. It feeds into our workers. It feeds into the safety of our communities. I mean, this is what the president has been so tone deaf on, and he's getting absolutely crucified on this issue.
You know, a lot of times we know who's calling the shots. You've been a chief of staff, Brad. Your brother's been a chief of staff for a president. Who's calling the shots, really, truly calling the shots in the Biden political reelection? Who's like the chief we don't see?
That's a good question. I mean, I ultimately you have to blame the president. It all comes down to the president. And
yeah, but
he's
okay.
Going to make these decisions. I think he's engaged. Like, I'm not one of the ones that I think the president certainly had a lot of missteps, and I think that he is too old to continue. I think, you know, all these things that we're hearing, I think a lot of it is true. I'm not willing to say he's totally inept and he's out to lunch, but
I'm just wondering who his Carvel.
I think it is on him.
I was wondering who his Carvel or Karl Rove is, or, you know, Lee Atwater. Because, you know, it's interesting. Today, Brad, one of the stories we're not really hearing much about because the weather up the northeast and the pattern, it's a pretty big storm system on the East Coast today, is today President Biden's going to have a conversation with Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel. And the media has already taken the White House spin. It's going to be a tough conversation, and Biden is very unhappy. And who is happy with, you know, a misguided strike on those seven humanitarian food workers? Israel's taking responsibility. But, you know, it is a terrible thing that happened. There's been a lot of loss of life in Gaza. But Biden administration has been steadfast ally with Israel since October 7th, even though Schumer comes out and says we should have elections in Israel. And you know, kind of does an about face. But now politically, Biden is, you know, the Democrat Party is worried that a lot of younger and Democrats are unhappy with the Biden administration policy supporting Israel with Gaza. They're almost more sympathetic to, now I'm not saying the Palestinian victims, but Hamas. We've seen this. Now today, Biden's going to do an about face after being a great ally. Now he's going to do an about face and be all upset with Netanyahu and Israel. I mean, so someone's calling that shot. I don't think it's the president.
Well, I think there's been a whole lot that you can criticize Benjamin Netanyahu on. And I don't think he's been the friend to the United States government, in a sense. He's put us in a bad position. He really has. Republicans and Democrats support Israel, and they overwhelmingly support Israel.
Do they?
And I think so, and I think the American people support Israel. Whoa.
I'm not so sure. You look at college campuses, and I still remember when the bodies were fresh after October 7th, glory to the martyrs and George Washington's, you know, the wall there. I mean, I don't know. I think it's more divided than you think.
Well, I'm not going to say it's not divided, and I think our patience is waning based on some of the things that have just happened in Israel. I just think that what the president needs to do is he needs to be very clear and direct with the American people. He shouldn't waffle. And if he's going to put the hammer down on Benjamin Netanyahu, he needs to put the hammer down on Benjamin Netanyahu and call it what it is. I think it's unfortunate that it's gotten to this point where we are divided now a little bit over. I think overwhelmingly people do support Israel because they were attacked by Hamas. And it's a terrorist organization. And those that defend Hamas, I think, are wrong. Under any circumstance. And it's also hard to say that Israel shouldn't just destroy Hamas in every way that they can. So the question is, could they be better and could they be more strategic? And I think the answer is probably yes. So that's my take on that. But I
All
mean,
right, what are you hearing?
You have Republicans, Jack, right now. Republicans right now are eating themselves, too. So Republicans should be crushing Joe Biden and crushing Democrats, in my opinion, but we tend to eat ourselves, right? Never underestimate Republicans' ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I mean, you have Marjorie Taylor Greene out there now calling for a motion to vacate the Speaker of the House. So when they come back from this recess next week, they're going to be having to deal with that.
And she's
calling him a Democrat.
Yeah. Let me switch
gears.
That's
not living in reality, though, Jack. I mean, look, you have a one-seat majority.
Let me ask you this. I want to switch gears. We have a few moments. Brad Card, Card and Associates. Let's talk about the 2nd Congressional District now open up. Ann Custer not running, as we all know, retiring. I'm hearing some big names on the Democrat side, including one or two out of Washington, or at least one with New Hampshire ties. What are you hearing on that race? And on the Republican side, what are you hearing?
Yeah, well, I've talked to a couple folks that seem to have interest in it, and I know, you know, certainly I'm curious to see what Dr. Vick is going to do. He's been out. And he's obviously run for office before. And
my prediction is, I know him well. My prediction is he'll run. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he will. I don't think he'll be alone in the race. I think there's going to be a lot of people running. And I think this race is winnable for a Republican. It is a Democrat district. It leans Democrat. But I think that a Republican can win that race. And it's been a long time since a Republican has served in that seat. Charlie Bass was the last Republican to hold the 2nd Congressional District. So it's going to be interesting. I actually think the 1st Congressional seat will still be competitive. It'll be a very competitive seat as well. That's a seat that I think should flip Republican before the 2nd, if you look at the partisan voter index. But you need to have the right candidate, and you can't have candidates that are completely whacked out. And we saw it before. You know, in my opinion, some of the hard right, crazy rhetoric can maybe win you a primary, but it can't win you a general election. And I would also caution folks to think they're going to take a page from Donald Trump. Donald Trump, for whatever reason, can get away with a lot more than what anybody else can. And he is held to a different standard, in my opinion. People expect right. different things from him than they expect from other candidates. And so he gets away with a lot more than most would get away with.
All right. I appreciate it. Brad Card, live, Card Associates.
Have a great day. Go Bruins.
Probably playing golf today. All right. Thank you, Brad. Mike Pomp of the Morning Information Center. And Mike, you've been at this since 5:30 this morning, talking about power outages, roadways, winds. We have a lot of trees in the state. You know it around your house.
Oh,
trees don't do real well when it's 40, 50 mile per hour wind gusts and heavy, wet snow weighing down on those branches.
I thought, was it last week we had the storm? Was it 2 weeks ago? I can't even keep track of it anymore. But I thought all the trees that were going to fall down, I figured, well, they all fell down, so that's it for now. And I have to give credit to Eversource and a lot of the other utility companies. They did, before this particular storm today, they actually cut back some of the trees even more. But it's been so weak with so much rain, the roots are very, very soft, and they're falling down. And we're seeing all sorts of crazy videos on social media as well of these big, big trees coming across roads and then taking down these power lines, which is just unbelievable. This is the worst part of these storms. I mean, we can deal with the snow and the ice and stuff, but when power goes out, you don't know how much you take it for granted. I mean, you think the power's going to be out, and it'll be back in an hour. No, it's not going to be back in an hour. Not at all.
And I heard Governor Sinner say with you and me earlier, even if we hit a little bit of a lull at around noon, the afternoon before this blows out with the tail, you're going to see probably more reports of outages scattered than less.
Well, the latest number I have is about 144,000.
Wow, that's higher than I was.
144,000 in New Hampshire, 80,000 in Maine as well.
That's a chunk.
And Central Maine Power Company has about 76,000 of that 80,000 in Maine. And, Maine is in the wilderness just like New Hampshire is in the North Country. And, my gosh, it's tough.
Yeah.
And I think what's really hindering things, and I think either heard it with William Hinkle or the governor, is that a lot of these roads are blocked off.
So the utility trucks can't get there to clear.
They can't get there at all.
Yeah.
I just got an email from the city of Dover. There's about 20 different roads just around us here. We may be stuck here for a while. I don't know. But there's about 20 different roads in the city of Dover that are closed already. And in Dover alone, about 1,600 people without power. And lines are down and everything else. And, of course, everything is closed. I mean, they started closing things last night, as you know.
But not on air news talk shows.
No, but we had a game plan just in case I couldn't get here.
Yeah. What time did you get up this morning?
I got up at 3 this morning. And
what time do you normally? Around 4? You had extra time to do.
No, I got up at 3, and I usually get about 3:15, 3:30, but I wanted to.
Wow.
I knew I had to shovel my walk a little bit this morning, and it's really heavy. I call this heart attack snow.
This is the bad stuff, because it is.
You got to be careful.
It's like shoveling cement.
You have to be careful.
You should be, yeah.
And I only can say one thing. I was shoveling. I was getting tired very quickly. You need to take breaks. Relax. Don't try to get it all done at once, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
but
I
you
know.
Want to try to get as much as
I
you
know.
Can. I have two porches. And God forbid it gets so heavy that the porches fall down. I don't want that to happen. So I have to get that stuff off my porch, my decks. I have two decks, one off the bedroom, one off the kitchen and living room area.
Well, people always say you're decked out.
I am decked out. It's just, and I told you this off the air, I am not one that handles this very well. I am not one that handles this very well.
There's always Florida.
I hate it. Oh, I've had listeners say, oh, how come you don't move to Florida? Well, I do like New Hampshire most of the time.
I know.
My one complaint about the Granite State, too short a warm season. I mean, it starts getting cool in the third week of August. And I said, that's the end of the summer, really? Seriously.
Well, yeah, we do have a period here through today, tonight. But the trees have been the big story in this one. I pulled out of where I am this morning, and there was a big one. And, oh, the people are so fortunate because it just missed. It was a big pine. I mean, big. Bigger than the house. Just missed the center of the house by 4 feet. It went right along the side of the house. They are so fortunate. Because imagine right... You're in bed and that thing comes right through the middle of your house?
I can't. In fact, I had one tree cut down before the winter.
Yeah, it's smart.
Which was up there for about 20 years, but was leaning right over my house. And I said, well, I think it's okay. It looked pretty solid to me, but we decided to have it taken down. And that stuff isn't cheap, as you know.
Oh, I know. Are you a napper? Do you get a nap in the afternoon?
Very rarely.
No?
Very rarely.
Great interview the other day, going into the Masters next weekend with that golf writer reporter about Tiger Woods.
Yeah, he has followed.
I was on the road listening.
He has followed Tiger Woods since the beginning. He's a former Sports Illustrated writer and works part-time for ESPN as well. I forget. I have to look back at my notes and see what his name was. I think it was John Hartig, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah, it's called Drive, the book.
It's really cool.
But it's not just his drive, like the golf drive, but his drive as an individual. He said he has a separate gear, which we all know about Tiger, including coming back after bad backs, accidents.
Well, you're a golfer. You remember 1997 when Tiger won the Masters by 12 strokes as kind of what we call a rookie, I guess?
But he was right. He made a point. He had been winning the national stuff.
Yeah.
But I think the most – you touch upon it, but I think the most miraculous part of Tiger – with the Masters coming up, was when he sort of fell from grace, the marriage, everything, the mugshot, and kind of just put his head down and slowly came back, even with the back issues, and won the Masters one more time. And that's amazing. I mean, you know, Jack Nicklaus won a major in his mid-40s. I got to tell you, every week now, it's tougher and tougher on this tour, so it should be fun. But I think it was a good and there's a great Netflix documentary on John McEnroe in the tennis world, and I think Tiger – as tumultuous, all the crazy stuff that was going on in his life, if you notice, that's when he was playing the best. Yeah. Like, you almost need this weird thing to kind of play against, this demon almost, the way McEnroe was. But Tiger, I'm a huge fan of him. I think I'd love to. One person I've not been able to see, you know, I've not been around him, like, just to talk. I just think he'd be a wonderful person to talk with.
Oh, I think he would be as well.
What he's gone through, yeah.
But I still don't realize, and I'm still trying to think back to that horrible crash in his car.
Yeah.
Number one, why he was going that fast on that particular road, we still don't even know the reason why.
No.
I mean, he wasn't drugged out or alcohol. Wasn't that at all.
He was late for a promo shoot.
He was late for a promo shoot, but my gosh.
He's lucky he's alive. Lucky his leg didn't lose his leg. Remember the surgeon said on the second day we might have to take the leg? And it was like,
yeah.
What?
Let alone play golf.
Let alone survive the accident.
Yeah,
You know, but he's amazing. All right, so we're going to let you continue to do your thing. It feels like we're going to continue. You said more than 140,000 total.
140,000 in New Hampshire. About 97,000 of those are Eversource customers, which, as you know, the biggest utility in the state. And over, of course, the border in Maine, which we do have listeners there. About 80,000 in Maine, and about 76,000 of them are from Central Maine Power Company.
All right, Michael Pomp, thank you.
Get some rest. Buddy.
Lucas Meyer, straight to the dome, one of our great Democrat analysts, strategists, and advisors. Lucas, are you excited for the eclipse? Are you paying attention to more wins this afternoon with the Nor'easter?
No, I mean, this eclipse, this is one of those moments where it's like, whatever you have to do for work that day, if you have the opportunity and the privilege to be able to take yourself away and go check out this eclipse, it seems like a pretty once-in-a-lifetime generation opportunity. So I'm actually heading up to Rangeley, Maine. My buddy's family has a camp up there, so we're going up to really be in the path of totality. Because, like, why not? Come on. Like, this is crazy stuff.
And then,
it's going to be a good time.
Hey, do me a favor. When you're in Rangeley, there's an area where you'll see some barbed wire fence in the Sears school, and they're doing some special ops training. When do you go in there and say you're a pilot and you want to be put through the ringer?
Yeah. I think they'll see right through me.
Unbelievable. Lucas, a lot of talk in the 2nd Congressional District, including someone who's married to the President's Biden National Security Advisor, who's from Portsmouth, of course, Jake Sullivan, with ties to New Hampshire, the daughter of Betty Tamposi, big Nashua political family from years past.
Yeah, Maggie Goodlander, someone who I do know who's worked in the state for a while and around the state, obviously, is down serving in the White House at the moment. But someone who has really an incredible resume, you know, Navy Reserves for 11 years, worked for Senator McCain, Senator Lieberman, worked for Merrick Garland, grew up with a family farm in Nashua, and then her grandfather was a part owner of the Red Sox. And you also had State Senator Becky Whitley announced this week an exploratory committee. We talked, it was only a week ago, Jack, and we were kind of ruminating on this, you know, what would this primary start to shape up? And in a week's time, you know, you have two really stellar female candidates running. And then I heard the other day that Rich Gullo, the president of the State Employees Union, is considering a run.
Wow.
So I think this is a recognition both of the opportunity this has presented itself to the opportunity that has presented itself. And also, I think, you know, I'm not really seeing as much energy on the Republican side as far as folks really chomping at the bit to jump into this race. Right. In fact, Bob Burns, a perennial candidate, announced this morning that instead of running for the second congressional seat, he'll now run for the executive council seat being vacated by former Manchester mayor Ted Gatsis. Yep. So we are in like full political season here, Jack, with pieces moving all over the board. But I expect to see, you know, even in next, when we check in next week, I imagine there'll be a lot more developments between now and then, but two very interesting candidates that have sort of risen to the top to join the primary with Colin Van Osten.
More to come. I'm sorry, CJ and for J-Dog with Mother Nature Day in the Nor'easter. I'm not sure. I don't want to hold Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. If Erin's there, we'll do a quick hi if she's been patient. If not, we'll catch you tomorrow. Your call, CJ. Okay. Lucas, what I'm going to do is let you go. Get ready for that total. Get ready for that total eclipse. I did have the governor on earlier. It sounds like he won't sign that legalized marijuana bill as it came out of the House Finance Committee as it is now, but I guess it'll be off of the Senate before we know, right?
I am 0% surprised, Jack.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Erin Rial, I'm sorry we get backed up with the governor, and we have a big nor'easter up here today. A lot of people without power. Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you for the patience. Financial literacy, some states more than others.
Yep, and New Hampshire is one of them. I want to say congrats to you guys because you are doing a very, very good job when it comes to financial literacy. You're actually in the top five, number five of the most financially literate states. The worst? Arkansas, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Kentucky, Alaska. You guys are only beaten by Minnesota in first place, followed by Nebraska, Virginia, and Colorado. This is a pretty good thing. This is all according to WalletHub. They looked at 17 different metrics. And the reason they're looking at this is because academics and a lot of policymakers are asking the question in this time of economic uncertainty and hyperinflation. They want to know where and to what degree should financial literacy be a part of K-12? I don't know about you, Jack, but I think it should be starting at K for the simple reason that, like, my six-year-old absolutely understands the concept of, like, borrowing. So I don't think explaining debt and credit and collateral, you have to explain it in ways that kids can get. But, like, they swap toys. They can understand this one. It's not too heavy a lift.
You know, Erin, I just got to say this because you sound like a great parent. Financial literacy, in my opinion, should be taught in public, all schools, right into college. The more financial knowledge you have, the better you're going to be able to be, well, you know, manage things. I'm always impressed with colleges, even if someone is an art student. I know that, for example, Plymouth State University will say, we want you to also take some business courses. So if you ever open an art business, you might know how to juggle. But, you know, there's one example, I want to say this quickly, and why this is one of those categories. When you see something make so much sense, why isn't it everywhere? We have a regional high school in New Hampshire called Spalding Regional High School. And I went in there for a tour years ago, and they had the industrial shop classes still going, woodworking, metal. But they had a credit union, a real credit union, inside the high school. And students could take an elective op. They could opt to take an elective course to learn money management and then eventually work part-time in the credit union with real customers. And what a great experience. Why is that? That's a great model for all schools.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it's things like that where it's like oftentimes you get to college and by the time you're talking about economics, you're talking about a lot of theoretical stuff, which is good. Yeah. And there's a place for that. But oftentimes you need to know, like, what car insurance coverage do I get?
Right.
What is a loan? So how do I structure the loan in the best way possible? These are very important things. And like you just described, like working in this credit union, that's brilliant. And those kids are going to be very financially savvy by the time they hit life.
Yeah. Thank you, Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you for your patience. But we're going to switch gears for our friends at Bank of America. Delighted to bring in Pam Siegel, and she is head of the inclusive entrepreneurship at Bank of America.
Good morning.
She joins us on a Nor'easter Thursday. How are you, Pam?
Good. I don't want to tell you what the weather is here in North Carolina.
Oh, but I can get it's probably beautiful because I've already heard from my brother-in-law down in Venice, Florida. He says, how's that nor'easter working for you? It's gorgeous here.
Exactly.
Well, you have a big presence there. And tell us a little bit about your role and specifically, what does your team do?
Yeah. So for the past 12 years, I have pretty much focused exclusively on women's entrepreneurship, and I can certainly talk about that a bit more and some of the challenges that women face and in getting their businesses started and funding. But more recently, we've begun to think, you know, beyond just really supporting women and other underrepresented entrepreneurs, and this could be diverse entrepreneurs, startups, you know, living in rural communities where they might not have access to a lot of things that can help develop businesses. So beginning to really think how we expand our support of women and diverse-owned businesses.
I love that, and because, Pam, almost every guest I have on my show, when they have a business, I always ask them the unexpected question. Tell me, how did you start your business? Tell me about the genesis of that. But let's go back to, because I want to learn more about you, but when you mentioned access to capital, that's an issue that's key to a small business or an entrepreneur. But to a woman, it can be that much harder. Tell us why that is and how Bank of America is helping to address that.
Yeah, sure. So women they have more challenges than men in accessing financing for their businesses. On average, men start their businesses with almost twice as much capital as women.
Really?
Yep. We do know also, like, here's the stat. Women receive less than 2% of equity or the VC that's out there. So that's really, you know, staggering when you think that women actually own 50% of the businesses, yet are only getting 2% of the equity. So we have done a number of things. So obviously, I mean, we have our traditional small business lending, and that, you know, meets the needs of many, many customers. But some of them don't fit into that box. Some of them are, you know, very early stage. Some of them might have unique businesses, and they need different Right. types of investments. So as of June 2023, you know, we've committed over $500 million in equity investments to minority and women-led funds. So these are, you know, they're beginning to find those types of entrepreneurs to invest in, the women and the minority. But we've also created a number of programs that help them to access capital. We have a capital directory where you can go online, and it's everything except bank financing. Of course, if you need a bank loan, we would expect, you know, you'd come to Bank of America. But this has all sorts of things in there, from grants to CDFIs, which are community development financial institutions, through equity types of investments. So you can really look at all of the different types of funding that are out there. And then more recently, just last week, we launched something called the Access to Capital Connector, and it is a tool that has 150 of these CDFIs. I mentioned those community development financial institutions. You can go answer about 15 questions, and it will automatically connect you with a CDFI who can help finance. And then if the answers aren't quite what we're looking for, you'll still have the option to connect with what we call technical assistance. That's organizations that might help you develop a business plan, work on your credit, understand the reasons and the factors why maybe you didn't qualify, and kind of get you capital ready.
Pam Siegel, Bank of America, some great expertise for women and others out there wanting to start a business, entrepreneurs, inclusive entrepreneurship at Bank of America. Pam, you know, it's interesting. I'm surprised to hear some of those private equity stats, because women do, last time I checked, own at least half of the businesses out there. So women account for a significant number of small businesses in our country. How important or critical to economic mobility and entrepreneurship is, you know, kind of getting capital in the hands of more women and small business owners in general?
Yeah, and it's really important because, you know, women entrepreneurs are different. They do start different kinds of businesses. They have different financing needs. But right now, you know, if you look at it, they have been growing significantly, particularly coming out of the pandemic, because a lot of women ended up having to leave more traditional jobs and employment and find opportunities by creating their own business. But we do know that, you know, women-owned businesses add $1.8 trillion to our gross domestic product. This is coming out of the U.S. Senate Committee on Small Businesses. They employ over 12 million workers. And then within, you know, subsets, we see that Black and African-American-owned businesses own 52% of the businesses owned by minorities. So there's these really huge segments that are growing and finding entrepreneurship as their path. And yet there's still a lot of challenges. And, you know, what we think about is that women entrepreneurs and a lot of these diverse entrepreneurs need four things. They need access to capital, as we've been talking about. They also need access to training, access to networks. Like,
connecting with other entrepreneurs is so important. It's a very lonely place sometimes. Then access to markets, helping them find customers. So we have programs that are addressing all of these.
Pam, as I said earlier, Pam Siegel, Bank of America, on the entrepreneurship side and all you're doing proactively. When I have a business owner or an entrepreneur on my show, we just had one yesterday, young person in the southern tier of the state is opening this new golf business. I think started in Korea, more high tech for those simulators. I think it's called X Golf, and he's all excited. They have 11 bays, restaurant, bar, and all that. And I wish him the best of luck. I mean, these things are popular. He's going through a tough time, of course, because summer is less than the two-thirds of the year in New England, but he's going to do great. My point is, I always ask, what made you want to do this? What was the driving force? So I want to ask you, Pam, you've been, I think you said in the beginning, 12 years you've been working at this. Kind of what's your background, and how did you come to Bank of America, and how did you make this a priority area to work on and make it such great progress?
Yeah, so I've been at the bank 30 years, which is hard for me to believe. And I've had a number of opportunities, but about 12 years ago, they had asked me to take on this role. And I identified, because it's one of those things that I've even said when I've provided advice to younger people, even in their corporate careers, is think like an entrepreneur. What do you see that needs to be done? What is the gap that you see? Find that opportunity and do it. You can still do that in a corporate role, but I really have a lot of heart for the entrepreneurs who see that, like the guy that you're talking about said, I see a market, I see an opportunity, I'm going to go for it. And sometimes, you know, the ideas are great, but understanding how to operate a business, how to get the capital, how to structure legal requirement. All of those things are so important. And so, again, we've been developing a lot of tools and programs to help entrepreneurs understand what they're getting into.
Well, you're a big organization, Bank of America, and kudos to Bank of America for seeing this, because I believe, and I think you share this passion, despite all the political divisiveness out there and what you want to say about Washington and things like the debt and the government and inflation, entrepreneurship is really a driver. It's so much in our economy, and you always want that tree or plant in the garden to keep vibrant. So thank you to Bank of America for really supporting and looking at these sectors and providing more capital. So thank you, Pam.
Absolutely.
And you didn't tell us the temperature in North Carolina. Is it going to be a 76, 77 degree day today?
Well, it was around 80 yesterday, but, you know, we're down to 70 today.
All right. Thank you, Pam Siegel.
Thank you.
And if people want to learn more, Pam, what's the best way?
Come to bankofamerica.com and the About Us section. There's a lot of opportunity to find these programs there.
All right, Pam Siegel. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Rory, I was talking a lot before the last break about your topic today, because I am not surprised at all with the college dropout rates going up. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but to me, it's all about economic reality. Take it away, Rory.
Well, right. And you start running the numbers, and college may not make sense for a lot of people. Right now, tuition plus fees and room and board on a four-year private college, now this is for 1 year, it's averaging $56,190 a year. That's $250,000 in a four-year degree. But even at the public colleges, $24,000 is the average for tuition, fees, room and board. So we're talking at least $100,000, even if you go to a public university. And some of the people are now running those numbers and saying, you know, it doesn't make sense for me to spend that much money, go into that much debt just to find myself. And we're seeing this younger generation really go in with more targeted ideas and trying to limit the debt they come out of school with.
Yeah, and Rory, I don't know where you stand on the age scale, but, you know, baby boomers and sort of my generation, a lot of families in my own family, cousins, relatives in Maine and other states, you'd hear that, oh, you know, my sister or me or, you know, one of the first member of the family to graduate from college,
right?
You know, a four-year college. It wasn't too many decades ago where not every kid in a three- or four-person family went to a four-year private or state college. And we've gone through decades now where that's more the norm than not. But I think inflation's taken its collective toll. I mean, heck, we've had the worst inflation in a half a century. So if you're if you're that family, Rory, where it's tight to pay bills, even if your combined income is really good, the money's going out so fast, and you take 40 or 50 grand that, or 100 grand if you have a couple kids going to college, the money's not there for most families. And then if you borrow it, you're dealing with debt.
Hey, look, in what, the late 80s and early 90s, I was working my summer job to save up enough money to pay for my tuition at the University of Rhode Island, and I could with just a summer job. You know, now, forget about trying to make 50 or 60 grand in a summer job. It's unreal. And I think COVID had a lot to do with shaking up our views on this, because there was still that $50,000 cost, and kids are learning remotely, and the parents are saying, wait a minute now, I'm not really getting my 50 grand worth if they're just looking at some online videos.
Right. All right, Rory, enjoy the nice. Don't tell me how nice the weather is in Florida. We have a nor'easter going here. Thank you.
I know. Sunny and 79. Thanks, Jack.
Oh, you had to get that in, didn't you?
Of course.
All right. Thanks, Rory. Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics, Executive Director, St. Anselm College. Really, no, I want to talk Mother Nature, but one thing before we forget, because it's important, real class act, wonderful person, Ted Gatzis, Executive Counsel, former Manchester Mayor, so long a scene in New Hampshire public policy, calling it quits as well, and not surprised per se, but really a wonderful person and a good example, I think, of public service, Neil.
He's been great, and, you know, doesn't matter really what party you're from, you can really respect the fact that he has devoted his life to the people of New Hampshire and Manchester, and he's a local guy. Even though he was quite successful in business, he always stuck by Manchester, and he was also, and I'm talking about him as if he doesn't exist, but, you know, he not a guy that you could really sort of just say, hey, can you do this for me and fix it? He always wanted to know what was in the best interest of the people in New Hampshire, and he was very devoted to that. So I think he and his wife, Cassandra, I think it's great that they're going to go and try to turn over a new leaf here and let somebody else do it. But he
good guy.
He will
good,
definitely
good
be
person.
Missed, particularly
yeah, I like
now.
Him. I like him. Good person. All right, so where were you last night, Neil, when this fire was happening? Tell us about this. Quite a scene in Rye.
Yeah, so the weather here, it's been blowing probably 30 knots, and it's been pretty consistent. And so I don't know what sparked this fire on Route 1A, but I can tell you that when you add a 30-knot wind directly into a 6,000 or 8,000-square-foot house, the amount of energy that was coming through, and the good news was it seemed like it was probably a 50 to 100-yard flame, just an enormous flame, but it was going out into the big salt marshes that you see when you drive up and down the coast, rather than towards some of the other houses. And I think that it probably we didn't have the disaster that we probably could have had here, because that fire was pretty intense for a while. And I believe they shut the road down. I'm not sure. They might have shut it down because high tide was at 7:30. And I mean, it was roaring like a freight train last night, and it's roaring like a freight train all morning and continues now.
Do you have
Although
power?
We still have power.
I was going to ask you if you have power. Yeah. Kudos to those Rye firefighters and police. Imagine the night they had and then the morning with high tide and the Mother Nature and the nor'easter.
Yeah, I mean, we've already suffered quite a bit of damage from, I think this is the fourth big storm, and the money that's been, you know, if you own an excavator in the state of New Hampshire, it should be over here, because when you drive down the coast, every half a mile that you'll see an excavator, because somebody is doing, you know, basically repair work, and it's a lot of damage here from the winter, but, you know, still a great place to live.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the classic nor'easter. Going to get more than a foot of snow in the North Country upper portion of the state. And then we have the total eclipse on Monday. What are your plans for that?
I don't even have any glasses. I don't know if you do. I've been in your studio, so I'm not sure what's going to happen on Monday
there. I heard you were going to swim out to the Isles of Shoals and check it out from there.
Well, that's a very nice compliment. I wouldn't get out of the harbor, as you know, but it is kind of funny. By the way, since I work at a college and I heard the last segment with Rory O'Neill, I have to object a little bit to what he said, because he may have said, well, I just worked through the summer and then it paid for my school at the University of Rhode Island. But now if you go to the University of Rhode Island, no one would go there if the menus and the fitness centers and the pools and the bark mulch they put around campuses wasn't pristine and the consumer is expecting that. And if you ask a student who's going to college now, what do they say? Oh, such a beautiful campus. Oh, they gave us a great sports scholarship. You know, so there's a lot that goes into this. It's not just the price of the education.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just a changing model. All right, I'm going to let you. Are you going to do any parasailing this afternoon?
I'll tell you, I was going to drive down, but it might be too hairy right now to go. It is nasty out here,
and I think it's going to continue because you and I know, and Governor Sununu said it earlier. Even if there's a lull, like a false lull, about noon or 1 o'clock, you and I know the tail of this thing. We're not done with that wind.
No, and it does so much damage when the tide comes up. So we'll see about the second high tide.
All right, Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics, stay safe. Thanks for the eyewitness account or report of that structure, the home fire in Rye. No one home, by the way. Was anyone living in that house?
They just sold that house for, I think, $3 million, and they were going to tear it down. So there we go.
I guess that they got that going for it, yeah. All right, Neil, thank you.
Thanks.
Tom Raffio knows all about that. Stories from the Starting Line author, president, CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Delta Dental Radio. Tom, with some good news to end our week a day early with your schedule. Are you a total eclipse person? You getting excited, and not to mention some snow?
Well, as far as the total eclipse, so what we're doing is, for all of our employees who work on campus, we bought the special glasses. And so we'll go out to our soccer field, assuming there's no more snow, and we'll have kind of a little fun thing with our employees. So I'm not going to the North Country or Vermont. I do have a couple of employees that are going to go up to Jay Peak to enjoy it.
Sure.
So in any event, I'm just really happy that it's going to be good news Monday with that. And then I just wanted to do a public service announcement. So there were two races this weekend. One was Saturday. It was called the Cheap Marathon in Londonderry, and uses the Wyndham Trail. Well, they've postponed that for 2 weeks because they weren't sure that they could get the rail trail, you know, plowed and shoveled in time. So it's going to be scheduled for 2 weeks from now. But Sunday, Jack, we have the SCA 5K, which is Sunday at 10 o'clock right here at Hayes and Dries. It raises funds for the Santa Fund, and it's something that Northeast Delta Dental has partnered with the SCA for many, many, many years on. And we actually have a little surprise. One of the elite runners in New Hampshire, a gentleman by the name of Dave Dunham, who is sort of at the Olympic level, is celebrating his 60th birthday, so we're going to surprise him. Although, of course, if he's listening to this, as everybody does, Jack, your show following is unbelievable. He'll now know it's not a surprise, but we'll do a surprise cupcakes for him. And then for my veterans friends, it just seems like I've been chatting with four or five every week. So 223-1300, leave your phone number, and Dr. Mitch or I will call back. For example, just yesterday, a gentleman named Mike called, and we have scheduled him for next week. And these are people, again, that if you're not eligible for the VA or not eligible for Medicaid, then you're eligible for our program. And I thank you, Jack, for calling that to my attention.
No, you've done what you've done in your board. How many you've helped hundreds of veterans, right? Over the last
hundreds, year. And it's with the 300,000 this year that we're allocating. By the end of this year, it'll be like 1.3 million of dental services we've provided, and that's on a discounted basis. Because essentially, what the dentists do is they take a significant discount, so we can conserve. We pay them, but we try to, that way we can conserve the funds, and we can really use 300,000 for throughout the whole year. And just to connect the dots for you, because I know how you like to do that. Tomorrow I'm going to be in Vermont, not to ski, although I wish I could, but I have the Delta Dental Plan of Vermont annual meeting. But because of what we learned in New Hampshire, Northeast Delta Dental, for everybody's benefit, is actually three companies, Delta of Maine, Delta of New Hampshire, and Delta of Vermont. So because of our experience in New Hampshire, the first thing we did was we extended the veterans program to Maine, but we then extended it to Vermont, and we've allocated $100,000 in Vermont. So I'll be reviewing that with the dentists tomorrow. As far as Medicaid, We had the one-year anniversary. Hard to believe, Jack, but we got the contract like in December of 22. We had 3 months, January, February, and March of 2023 to get up and running, and we've been doing a full-court press since that time. So it's one-year anniversary. We had a wonderful event at the Statehouse a week ago. Today, as a matter of fact, and many of the legislators, like Senator Rosenwald, and many others, were there and were able to. It was really kind of a celebratory because, as I've explained, this is the one time that basically both sides of the aisle, and I think it happens way more in New Hampshire, obviously, than D.C., but collaborated together, and everybody's happy. And so it's a positive story, but we have more to do. So if you see the mobile dental clinics at different spots, it's because we recognize we don't yet have enough dentists in the network, so we'll bring the dentistry to the people. And then as far as my radio show this weekend, I think you will really enjoy it because I know you're into roller derby.
Hey, wait a minute. Between professional wrestling and other stuff, getting ready for games as a kid, that used to be a very popular thing on
Saturdays.
Of course,
yeah. Remember Saturday, we would watch that, professional wrestling.
Big surprise. I used to like the fights. Big surprise.
And then the candlepin bowling. But we have Claire and Abby with us, and they'll be talking about the Grand State Roller Derby League that is pretty much during the summer at the Everett Arena in Concord. So,
good stuff. Go ahead, Tom.
No, go ahead.
Is my memory correct? A number of years ago, when you were on my show early in the morning, didn't you do some like boxing for a workout as a workout?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I thought of you. I you know what I did was I've been talking about this for years, thinking about this for years, and I didn't know, should I order online? Should I go? So I went to a pretty good sporting place in person and got the great, you know, best help. But I got a punching bag now up in my my room, they call it. And I got to tell you, what a workout.
It's a great workout. So I used to go to Title Boxing in Concord, which was near Orange, and they closed, but I'm still a member in the Manchester one. But, yeah, if you jab, cross, upper, do that stuff, and I have a bag in my basement as well. It is definitely
I'm telling you, just a heavy
huge
bag.
Workout.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, you know what inspired? I saw this video, and a lot of people are going to laugh, but don't. He's 84 years old, but he's like a rock. Help me out here. Chuck Norris used to be Texas Walker, and he was a martial artist. But his thing at 84, he has a bag on his porch, his ranch, and he just does 20, 30 minutes a day. And he says that's my main workout now. And the guy looks like he's 50. He looks like he's 45 years old with his shirt off.
Yeah, I actually saw that. I was impressed. I couldn't believe he was 83 or 80 or 84.
I thought he was like 75 or something. I didn't know. I mean,
he looked great. So again, for my running friends, no race Saturday, but the SCA race on Sunday is on. And for my veterans friend, just give me a call at 223-1300. Thanks, Jack, for accommodating me today. Take care. Bye-bye.
Enjoy Vermont. And isn't it crazy that veterans don't get their own health care? Thank you, Tom.